It's Celtics coverage on CLNSRadio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward. Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
Well, the preseason is over, but the regular season starts in just under 10 days. I am Andrew Rubino. Alongside me tonight is Jack Michael. We apologize for a little bit of a delay. Just like the players didn't look great on the Celtics tonight, technical difficulties for the CLNS media team. But nonetheless, I am excited to have Jack Michael on. Jack, I want to start with Brad Wanamaker tonight. It's kind of funny to be starting with a guy who's going to be far down in the Celtics rotation. But look, Marcus Smart tonight got kicked out. He got ejected. We can get to that in a bit. But the biggest thing is Brad Wanamaker comes in for Marcus Smart. And in my opinion, if Marcus Smart or anybody in the Celtics guard rotation gets hurt this year and Wanamaker needs to play a little more, he didn't do anything tonight to me to make me feel any better about him coming in and providing some stability.
Yeah, he looks kind of a step slow out there. And, you know, we saw it in the first quarter, obviously, after Smart got ejected. We saw a little bit of Point Al after Wanamaker was ineffective. And him coming in, you know, he came over from Europe over the summer with a guaranteed contract. He's the kind of a guy that would expect to, you know, get minutes. You know, he left money on the table to come from Europe. So after this performance, I mean, we kind of got, you know, we had Shane Larkin last year who kind of was a blessing for us as a fourth point guard. So we'll have to see how that continues, you know, into the season in a week.
You know, and this is the thing for me, Jack, too, is you have a guy like Wanamaker who comes in and the first couple of things he does is lose the ball. And he gets pickpocketed by a guy in Isaiah Taylor on the Cavs who's fighting for a roster spot. And then you have him making a really erratic play where he goes up and loses the ball and tries looking for a foul, but it was obviously not a foul. And it wasn't anything fluid, I guess you want to call it, with his play early on when he was playing with those starters. And look, he definitely had a couple nice passes later on to Robert Williams, but those were scrub minutes. Those were minutes that Wanamaker is not necessarily looking for this year. He more wants the minutes where he was playing in the first half and not playing well.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, he's going to be looking for those bigger minutes. He is a 29-year-old, essentially a rookie in the NBA, and I didn't see any of his play in Europe. I haven't seen any of his play, you know, before this season, so I don't know if he's a shooter, if he's not going to be, like, because he passed up a couple good looks. He took 1-3 that looked a little ugly coming off his hand, so I don't know how that's going to fare for him when it comes to getting minutes in, you know, good minutes in regular season games, because if he's not going to be able to do that, if he's not going to, you know, be able to run the pick and roll effectively, then I don't know what kind of role he's going to have on this team.
Well, that's the thing that bothered me, too, is he gets the ball bounced out to him. He has a wide-open three, and this is early on, right after he comes in for Smart, and he kind of hesitates, and then he resets the offense, right? And then he takes a pick from Horford and shoots, almost an unnecessary three very early in the shot clock. So it's like, all right, Wanamaker, if you're going to reset the offense, let's get it to Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, who are your 20 and 21-year-old wings. They're on the floor with you for a reason.
Yeah, and I get that he maybe was pressing a bit to try to, you know, kind of make an impression with Brad, make an impression with the coaching staff, kind of show that he does belong. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, if Danny Ainge gave him a guaranteed contract, I do believe that he, you know, he does belong in the NBA. But, you know, there are some decision-making things that have to be made that – or some better decisions that have to be made on his part that, you know, hopefully we could see improvement on within the next couple of weeks, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and, you know, look, I mean, Wanamaker, if he is going to be a guy that's going to make or break the Celtics this year, that means the Celtics have way too many injuries. But you never know, because look at the way everything happened last year. All of a sudden, there were times where Shane Larkin was getting big minutes. I really think that you have to look at Wanamaker as a guy very similar to Larkin's role last year. But the difference is Larkin's the type of guy that came in and he had all of this energy, and he was almost like a gnat. He almost reminds you of a J.J. Barea. He's undersized, but
yeah,
he's going to come in and he's going to play hard. With Wanamaker, he doesn't almost look the part. He almost looks like a guy that was given God-given abilities, but he's just not as good. So it kind of scares you when he's that, but he's also not the best playmaker, and he's kind of taking like awkward shots. It's almost like, is he going to work as hard as a guy like Larkin in a Brad Stevens system? And I don't know. Do you think, Jack, that he's going to get as many quality minutes as Larkin? Because after tonight, I mean, look, it's preseason, and maybe I'm overreacting a bit, but with a guy like Wanamaker, you don't know what type of minutes he's going to get after a performance like that and kind of in a comparison role to Larkin of last year.
Yeah, like you said, I don't want to be too hot takey on it, but, you know, we did just sign Marcus George's Hunt as well, and we do have Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier, and Kyrie Irving, who, you know, knock on wood, in a perfect world, we're going to have for the entire season. You know, and like I said before, Shane Larkin was our fourth point guard last year, but he did bring that energy. He did bring that consistent, you know, kind of just J.J. Barea-ish kind of play where he was just come on the floor and he was a ball of energy for, you know, 5 minutes spurts, 8 minute spurts, whatever it was. So if Wanamaker's not going to bring that, if Wanamaker's going to kind of be more of that, you know, slow it down, reset the offense, pick and roll, pick and roll, pick and roll kind of, you know, ball handler, you're right. I don't know what kind of minutes he is going to get, especially with a guy like Georges Hunt, who has proven that he can play in the NBA as well, you know, kind of waiting in the wings on the training camp roster.
Well, and this is the thing, too. Georges Hunt is a guy that in the game the other night, he had in a game last year in the regular season, in the very beginning of 2018, he was playing for the Timberwolves, and
– yep.
He had 12 points, excuse me, in 29 minutes. So like you're saying, Georges Hunt's a guy that's proven in this league. Wanamaker's a guy that's been a little bit of an international mainstay and now is finally getting his shot. So maybe it's just the fact that he's coming back from playing international and he's kind of having a transition period. I don't know if that's an excuse or not, but he definitely looked a little bit, not confused, but it's almost like he seems like he's calm, and all of a sudden he kind of got flustered because he had a couple mistakes.
Yeah, he is. You know, he is playing for the roster spot. I am going to cut him some slack there. He made a couple mistakes where it just seemed like he was pressing a bit, or he was kind of almost deer in headlights kind of look, where he just went up for the layup and lost it, or, you know, got fouled and whatever. But yeah, like it is tough for a guy that's 29 years old to come over from playing in Europe for however many years, you know, albeit being one of the better players in Europe, but, you know, to come over from that game. And as we always say with rookies, it's the speed of the NBA that really gets guys. It's the speed of the NBA that's really the toughest transition to make for, you know, pretty much anyone.
Right, and look, I mean, Wanamaker, he's a guy that he's a fringe roster guy. I do think he'll sneak on. I'm sure there's a reason why. I mean, the Celtics signed him early in the offseason. He was a guy that they're not just bringing in kind of last minute like they are with Marcus Georges Hunt. So we'll see what happens with Wanamaker, but before we get to Wanamaker, I do want to have a quick word from one of our sponsors.
Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents what being home is all about. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Brad Marchand, Milan Lucic, Aaron Baines, and the list goes on over the years. It's more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's a spot to catch up while getting lined up, and it's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands of people that visit the North End throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, a North End landmark that represents the epicenter of the neighborhood at its core, located at 113 Salem Street.
All right, so Jack, look, I want to get back to the very beginning of this game, and me and you were talking off air that the Celtics looked a little bit sluggish, and I know Scow and Mike Gorman were talking on the broadcast that maybe because they're practicing so hard, the guys don't have their legs like they usually do, but it was a pretty slow start and only 21 points for the Celtics in the first quarter.
Yeah, and I mean, a bunch of people have said it as well on Twitter and wherever that, you know, we are the last game, real game we saw the Celtics play was, you know, game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals where everyone was kind of leaving it all out there. So we are really used to them playing, you know, 70%, 80%, whatever you call it tonight. But so, and it is still preseason, so let's not, you know, I don't like to get hot take and I like to overreact. But the one thing that I did notice in the first half that was kind of glaring to me, at halftime, the Cavs had 4 offensive rebounds. We had 11 offensive rebounds, right? We were winning the rebound battle by 1. And every time we got an offensive rebound, we made use of those points. We got second chance points off. And not every time, but, you know, it seemed that way. So the first quarter, though, was bad for offensive rebounds. It seemed to be 4 Cavs crashing the boards every time. It seemed to be that they were just packing the paint. It seemed to be that they were kind of just leaving our shooters. And I mean, at least for tonight, you know, we hit like 0 threes. You know, it was just terrible. We were like a team of cowards out there. So, Like Ben Simmons, exactly. So it was just like, and nights like this are going to happen, but, you know, the way you get back into games like that is you can crash the board, you can kind of try to prevent the other team from packing the paint by hitting shots. Obviously, that's not, you know, that's easier than it, or that's harder than it sounds, but it's just, you know, sometimes that you have those nights, and it just seemed like that in the first half. The second half was a little better, though, but we're talking about the first half now.
Look, I mean, and this is my thing, too, is you have the Celtics shoot 2 of 15 in the first half. They're not going to shoot that every game, and that's more than fine and kind of like what you're saying. But I think the thing that makes Celtics fans excited is that in a game where they're sluggish, in a game that they don't look great, you still have so much depth that Morris and Rozier look great. Al Horford looks great. So I kind of want to talk about Horford's play especially because he really facilitated the ball well tonight besides just scoring. I mean, the scoring almost opened up his facilitating. He had some great dimes out there. I really enjoyed the way Horford kind of controlled the tempo. And look, he's obviously getting further up there in age. He's obviously on the back nine of his career. But he showed that he's ready and he's fresh, even though he played deep into the playoffs last year, obviously, with the Celtics team.
Yeah, the one that really stuck out to me was when he caught on the right baseline. I forget who he was posting up against, but he had posted up. He spun baseline, and then Jalen made a quick cut. Al jumped up, you know, as if to hook it, and then dumped it really quickly off to Jalen for a layup. And that, like, that's the one that really stuck out to me. Another one that I Jason Tatum had a good – like, the ball was moving well in the first half, I thought. Jason Tatum had a good play to Al early in the game where he kind of cut baseline and then just got a quick pocket pass off to Al for a hook. And that was when it was, I think, probably 11-2 Cavs, 9-2 Cavs. So that kind of got our offense quick started a bit in that first half.
Look, and this is my thing, is Horford, at the end of the day, is always going to be one of the leaders because he is the OG of this Celtics almost expansion of this team that's seen guys change over when it was when they were really bad, and then you had kind of the Isaiah and him kind of together creating something, and Horford's been there through it all. So to have Horford still playing well, playing consistent, I think it would be an issue if in this preseason you were seeing a little bit of a drop-off with Horford's play, but no, not at all. But I will say, look, I have to say one thing, Jack. Terry Rozier looks pretty darn good this year so far in the preseason. I mean, he's playing, I don't know if it's just the Puma Clydes or what it is, the white Puma Clydes with the white jerseys or whatever it is, but he is gliding out there and he is almost looks effortless at times the way he's getting to the rim so far this preseason.
Something that had been a big problem for him, you know, over the first 3 years of his career was kind of finishing. And it's been really encouraging for me that, you know, some of these reverse layups that he's trying, some of those kind of right-hand, left side of the rim layups that he's doing are going in, because those are just so big confidence builders for him, you know. And he wasn't great tonight, but everyone wasn't great tonight, so it's not like that was, you know, not normal for tonight. So I'm one of Terry's biggest fans, so I'm always going to go to bat for him. But it is his contract year, but he really did show last year, especially in the playoffs, especially, that he can kind of be that primary ball handler, that facilitator on a team, and also take the big shot. And I think we're going to continue to see that this year. Brad said it himself, he's going to have to, you know, he has to find the minutes to put Terry Rozier on the court as long as possible. And, you know, Abby Chin was talking to Terry about it tonight, and he heard it for the first time, and he said, yeah, I'm just going to try to make Brad's job hard, you know, trying to keep me out on the floor as much as possible.
I did think it was funny, though, he hadn't heard that. And you can just tell, too, that Brad, it's not like you have some of these teams just in sports in general, say, a lot of the Pittsburgh Steelers this year, where everybody's communicating through the media. I mean, Brad Stevens is only saying positive things about his guys through the media, and there's this nice comment about how he's going to get Terry. Brad Stevens said he's going to get Terry Rozier as many minutes as he can, and Terry's like, oh, he said that, that's cool. But it's like, it just shows the aura that Brad Stevens has and how he has a hand in everything on this team, in that he's only saying positive things about these guys, and he's making Terry Rozier feel just as integral a part of the team as he is Kyrie Irving, who obviously just had his whole announcement about how he wants to stay. And he's not going to let – you can tell Brad Stevens doesn't want to let anybody feel too important, because he knows at the end of the day, every person on this Celtics team is going to be important if they want to make a realistic run at the NBA title this season. And another person who's a very integral part and sometimes gets forgotten, I think, is Marcus Morris. So tonight you have Marcus Morris, a very efficient 5 of 12 shooting, 17 points. I love the way Marcus Morris plays. I think he's tough. I think he's one of those guys that you need on an NBA roster to make it all the way to an NBA title or to make a run in the playoffs like the Celtics did last year. So, Jack, just kind of your take on Morris tonight and just his intensity, I guess, in a preseason game that didn't matter, but he still looked pretty good.
Yeah, something that really stuck out to me tonight, and I think it was Alex Kungu of Celtics Blog and other outlets that had tweeted it out tonight, that his shot selection, he's shooting about 50% of his shots from three, and that, you know, that held over to tonight. He shot 7 threes out of 12 field goal attempts, you know, and if that's something that people really had a gripe about with him last year, was that he would be hijacking the offense too much, taking these, you know, 15, 16 foot pull-ups, taking turnarounds, et cetera, things like that. I thought he really got into the offensive boards tonight a lot. I did like that. Well, he only had two, but, you know, he did have a bunch of possessions where he got right under the rim. He had a couple cuts. He had a couple, you know, drives where he wasn't taking a turnaround. So I do like the fact that, you know, I don't know if someone talked to him. I don't know if he said it to himself, but his shot selection seems to be a lot better. Because if he's taking, you know, 50% of his shots from three, if he's taking, you know, three or four or five threes a game in 20-odd minutes, and he's hitting, you know, two of them, that's perfect. That's exactly what we need. Plus, he plays hard defense at times. And as long as he's not, you know, hijacking possessions too often, I think he's a great, like you said, he's a great guy to have on a team.
Right, and I think his aggressiveness tonight showed as well. I mean, he got to the line 6 times. He made 5 of those foul shots. So it just shows that he is a guy, at the end of the day, you put him in a game, he's calm. And as I don't know if calm is the exact word, but he doesn't do anything that's not within his range. I think, in my opinion, look, he might jack an extra shot here or there, but he knows his place. He knows he's going to get his catch and shoot threes. He knows he needs to play tough. And you need as many guys as you can with kind of secure identities. And I think Morris, more than anybody on this team, has just as secure as anybody on this team with his identity. So I was impressed with Morris tonight, no doubt. But something you pointed out to me, Jack, off air when we were kind of talking about this game, is how the Celtics had so many offensive rebounds, and it really just felt like taps almost back, like to the off the backboard, or just keeping it alive. And the combination of Baynes and Tice, I think just maybe the fact that they're both so big that they almost kind of blend in together. I will say this, they did a good job with their energy tonight, and the Celtics are going to need that when Horford needs a break at times this season.
Yeah, I also want to make a comment on Tice really quickly too, because I was, you know, he didn't really play that much. He only played 4 minutes. I think he only had that one stint in the first half. He hit one shot out of two, but it doesn't look like he really lost any of his mobility from last season, you know, despite having the torn meniscus, despite being in rehab basically since, what was it, late March or April. So I think that's an encouraging sign, because I've thought at times this preseason maybe start to play Robert Williams over him, even when it comes to the regular season, because I think Robert Williams can kind of, you know, play up to that level a bit. But if Tice can, you know, if he keeps that mobility and if he kept his shooting stroke, you know, that's another guy that's an invaluable guy to have on a team, because like last year, he probably would have started on the Warriors. And like you said about Baynes too, a guy that comes in and he'll have energy. If he's coming off the bench this year, which presumably he will, barring any other injuries, like coming off the bench, he's just a guy that's going to, you know, pound with big guys down low. He can set good screens. He has good shooting touch, as we saw in the playoffs last. So it's just kind of another invaluable guy. And you, like you said about Marcus Morris, he's secure in his identity. He knows exactly what he needs to do. He knows what he can do. He knows what's within his realm of possibility as an NBA player. And I think that's, you know, two great guys to have on a team. Plus, we have Robert Williams behind him at this point. So, you know, it's kind of just great insurance policies to have, like you said, with Al Horford getting
an insurance policy, Jack, it's a perfect segue kind of to what I want to talk about related to this topic. Is it's almost like the way you kind of phrase it, right, like a lot of what you just said is, well, in a way, maybe the Celtics have too much because you want to play Williams over Tice, but then you have Baynes too, and Horford obviously starts. Look, last year I feel like I was having the same exact conversations with guys on these very post-game shows when the Celtics had this great depth of Horford, Baynes, and Tice, and then Greg Monroe was available, and the Celtics signed Monroe, and everybody was like, oh my God, like, what, the Celtics have now four bigs, and they don't even need to play that big, and they have all these wings, and X, Y, Z, and guess what? I felt like a couple weeks later, Tice got hurt, and guess what? Monroe was a great insurance policy. So like you're saying, Jack, there's nothing wrong with having four quality bigs, especially when Robert Williams shows flashes tonight of what he can potentially do. And Robert Williams, look, he was playing a lot of his minutes towards the end against guys on the Cavs that are either going to be on two-way contracts or playing internationally this year. But Williams still looked like a man among boys in his short stint on the court tonight, in my opinion. And if you have a guy of that caliber, of that raw of a skill set, and he's young, to play behind three great, well-known commodities in the league of Horford and Baynes and Tice, I think that the Celtics have some great depth, like you were saying, or insurance policies for this coming year with the Celtics team.
Yeah, like you really can never have too many good players. Like having more good players than another team is not going to be a bad thing ever. I don't think, at least. I mean, some people might disagree, but yeah, like having Robert, like, because also early in the season, you think about it, we can kind of experiment with lineups a bit. The one person I am is worried about is going to be Semi Ojeleye, actually. He's someone that I'm worried about might kind of get squeezed a little bit with Gordon Hayward returning, with Marcus Morris playing this well, with, you know, with Semi shooting struggles in the play, in the preseason so far. But, you know, but Robert Williams, you know, on the other hand, is a guy that's really encouraged me. You know, he really does look like he has the IQ that people said he didn't have. You know, people calling him stupid, people calling him an idiot, people saying, like, what the hell is he doing, oversleeping? You know, it's kind of all those kind of generalizations people made about him kind of aren't coming through. He has real passing chops. You know, he has real court vision. He's blocking jump shots when he's standing, you know, 6 feet away from the shooter. It's the most absurd thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, he had another one today where it looked like he was standing, you know, maybe 4 or 5 feet away from the guy that was shooting it, and he just reached up and blocked it. His wingspan is enormous. So it's like having the guys with these physical tools, you know, behind a guy like Al Horford, behind a guy like Aaron Baynes, is invaluable, absolutely invaluable.
Right, and look, this is the thing, too. It's easy to be like, oh, well, it's better to have more players that are good than others that are bad. But it's one of those things that I think a lot of times people in this league are like, well, the league's all about wings now and positionless basketball. But these bigs can play the four or the five. And all of these guys, except really for Williams, we haven't totally seen his outside game yet. I've watched some films in college. It's kind of a hit or miss. He's mostly an inside guy. But you have these four bigs that they're all quality guys, so you can't complain about having too much depth, especially down low, because these guys, they're not necessarily a dime a dozen. The Celtics have some kind of unique big men that fit their system. They're all facilitators in a way, and I really think, too, Robert Williams tonight, he showed it, and Scal said on the broadcast, Brian Scalabrine said on the NBC Sports Boston broadcast, that when Williams caught that one alley-oop from Brad Wanamaker, it was effortless. I mean, he kind of just jumped up quick. I'm going to slam this home, and I'm just going to run back down the court. It was DeAndre Jordan-esque athleticism, and I think that's pretty scary the Celtics were able to get that with a 27th overall pick.
Yeah, and you had mentioned it with the perimeter game. You know, Al Horford, a little bit Aaron Baines, and also definitely Robert Williams are just bigs that can really just get out and defend on the perimeter. Right? So, like, Aaron Baines, yeah, we showed he could shoot a little bit.
They're all athletic guys.
Yeah, so I would say, like, Robert Williams, on offense, he's just a dunker, right? He's really in the paint. He's going to catch lobs. He's going to roll hard. He's going to, you know, he's going to make mostly layups, you know, maybe a short little hook here and there. He's almost like, you know, you said DeAndre Jordan. I would almost maybe say Clint Capella-esque, you know, to where he can really get out of the perimeter.
No, that works. That's a cool comparison, yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, sometimes it's not great to make comparisons of, like, rookies to, like, stars, but you see, like, people see the vision here where it's like he's making hard rolls, he's defending inside, he's blocking shots, he's getting out on the perimeter. So it's real, and he has passing chops as well. So it's, you know, it just having a guy like that is just really good. I don't know what else I can really say about it. Like, he just seems to fit in with everything that we want to do.
No, he does, and even more so, look, there was all of this talk of, oh, my goodness, he misslept on the very first conference call, and then, oh, my goodness, he missed the practice because he didn't get on the team flight. Look, have you heard a peep about him since then? No, because you know why? The Celtics probably sat him down. The amount of veteran leadership on this team, and look, Brad Stevens does not seem like the type of guy to me that's going to chew you out and make you feel bad about yourself. He's going to chew you out and say you're going to get better. And I think that's why all of these Celtics players love and just kind of preach about Brad Stevens, and probably a huge reason why Kyrie Irving is just settling down in Boston and wants to tell the media to shut up, because he trusts a guy like Brad Stevens and a GM of Danny Ainge. But one guy that was in with Robert Williams at the end of that game was Walt Lemon Jr., Jack, and I want to talk about him and kind of his role and maybe if he ends up making this team or not on the other side of the break.
What's up, my Garden Report people? It's Jimmy here, and hear me out. We all know buying tickets to sports and concerts can be very complicated and confusing. We've all gone to many events over the years, but there's now a better way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event, whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, maybe a date night, or maybe you really screwed up over the holidays and you got to make up for it with a better gift. You can also buy yourself a ticket, a little trick. SeatGeek will help you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. I have the app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, anytime, and with just a few taps on the SeatGeek app, I can instantly find the seats I'm looking for. And actually, I plan on using it for Justin Timberlake tickets in the future because he's bringing Sexy back once again. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And on top of that, you get the most bang for your buck. SeatGeek will grade every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the seats that fit your budget. And did I mention it's all fully guaranteed? That's right, no ticket scalpers trying to pull the wool over your eyes. So make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts, comedy, theater, or whatever weird thing you might be into. Best of all, my listeners will get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code GARDENREPORT today. That's promo code GARDENREPORT, one word, and you get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Go! Hey everyone, Jimmy T here from the Garden Report, and if you're like me, you're always looking for ways to cram a healthy lifestyle into a busy schedule. And that's why I've incorporated RX bars into my diet. Beyond being a go-to snack that checks off a number of nutritional boxes, RX bars actually do taste delicious. They created a bar made from real, whole food ingredients that actually taste better than anything else out there. And I'm a protein bar guy. No fillers, no additives, no chemicals, and no added sugar. Guys, you can actually pronounce these ingredients, and here they are. 3 egg whites, 2 dates, and 6 almonds. The egg whites for the protein, dates to bind, nuts for texture, bada bing, bada boom, you got yourself a protein bar. Comes in 11 different flavors. You can like the sweet, maybe you like some chocolate, some fruit. I go blueberry, but I'll also mix in a chocolate chip if I have a sweet tooth. Guess what? They're gluten-free, they're soy-free, they're dairy-free, so if you get that going on, you're good. Good for breakfast on the go, little snack at the office. Personally, I throw it in my gym bag. Eat it after a nice workout, no big deal. So listen up. For 25% off your first order, just go to rxbar.com/CLNS. When you get there, enter the promo code CLNS at checkout, and you'll get 25% off your order.
and you can thank me later.
Hi, everybody. This is Jimmy Toscano here from the Garden Report, and I have a message for all you singles out there. Sup? Aside from that, if you're trying online dating, chances are you've run into, lazy text messages, dead-end conversations, random matches that don't turn into dates, so on and so forth. Well, you just can't get to know someone by looking at their picture. That's why eHarmony is different. They take steps that other dating sites just don't take in order to find you a more compatible match. Just ask over 1 million people they've already found perfect matches for. That's because eHarmony uses years and years of science, data, and psychological research to send you the right matches. Let them help you. And right now, I can help you too, because my listeners can get a free month with eHarmony when they sign up for a 3-month subscription. Just enter my code GARDENREPORT, one word, GARDENREPORT, at checkout. Stop waiting and start your journey to a satisfying, meaningful relationship. It can be fun to play around with online dating apps, but when you're ready to fall in love with someone and have a meaningful relationship, there's only one app that's built to bring you real love, eHarmony. Come see how eHarmony changed your life. Go to eHarmony.com and get started. Enter my code GARDENREPORT at checkout.
All right, well, thank you for that, and we're welcoming Jack Michael back in. I'm Andrew Bino. This is the Celtics post-game show on CLNS Media. Jack, look, this is the preseason, and there's some guys on the Celtics team that most likely might not make the roster. But one guy that's been impressing me, at least, over these first 4 preseason games is Walt Lemon Jr. So the other night when he played against the Cavaliers, he had a very nice night. He had 11 points in just 12 minutes. And then you also have tonight, he looked really good. He was out there making some athletic plays. Scalabrine went as far as to comparing his athleticism to John Wall, which I thought was a little bit disrespectful to John Wall. But nonetheless, he did look good out there. He had 10 points in 15 minutes, had a couple steals and 3 assists. So a really nice stat line for a guy that, like I said, only played 15 minutes. So, Jack, maybe the Celtics kind of keep tabs on him in a Bill Belichick Patriot way, and make sure that if this Jabari Bird stuff gets as bad as it sounds like, maybe you keep Walt Lemon Jr. around, because he looks pretty good out there, man.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of playing that pest role where he was getting up in people. He was making steals off of inbounds. He was making steals just pickpocketing people. You know, he was kind of being that guy that got under people's skin tonight. And that's a great role to play. Like we were saying before with Shane Larkin last year, that energy guy that comes off the bench, can get a couple buckets, will play hard defense, you know. And the John Wall comparison was maybe a little far, but Scal will be Scal. He looked really good out there. He has a smooth stroke, you know, when he takes a jump shot. He seemed to be a fine finisher, and he was, you know, he's another guy that can just handle the ball when you need a ball handler on the floor.
Right, and look, I think the other thing, too, is that he definitely played with some passion out there tonight, and I think that the Celtics overall as a team, nobody really seems into it. Even some of the guys that are kind of on the fence are guys that are going to be far down the Celtics rotation. So, if anything, I give Walt Lemon Jr. a lot of credit for going out there and looking good. And my biggest thing is all of these guys, this is an audition more than anything else. Like, they might care about the Celtics a little bit in the fact that they're giving them an opportunity, but it's really a much sexier G League, summer league tryout, because a lot of these guys are in and out of the league, and they need as much film as they can get in front of these NBA coaches and execs. So I think Walt Lemon Jr., he showed tonight that he can at least play in this league, and he's probably better than a lot of the scrubs in this league. And I say scrubs in the nicest way possible, but the guys in the league that are kind of in and out, Walt Lemon looks like a guy that he's probably on the higher end of those guys. And obviously we talked about a guy like Marcus Georges Hunt, who he played really well the other night as well. So, I mean, look, and he showed some flashes tonight. So there's a lot of guys on the Celtics team that are – it's just funny how many guys that they have at the very end of their rotation that might not even make the team that still looked pretty good tonight.
Yeah, and, you know, if this Jabari Bird stuff doesn't obviously work out, and I don't want to make a comment on that right now, but I just want to say hopefully maybe he doesn't come back to the team. But if that last roster spot is open, you know, it does make the decision more difficult for Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens and them, because having guys like Walt Lemon, having guys like Marcus Georges Hunt, who have played in the league before, have proven that they've been able to, you know, be in the NBA and be effective in the NBA level. You know, having guys all the way down to the 15th guy on the roster, having guys all the way down to the two-way contract guys on the roster that can really play is, you know, it's a good problem to have in a way, but it's still a problem because you do have to make these cuts and you do have to, you know, decide which players are going to go where. And these players have to make decisions for themselves too. They have to decide what's best for them. If they want to stay, you know, in the Celtics system, maybe get a two-way contract with the Celtics, or maybe get that 15th man, or see if they can get something better in Europe, see if they can get something better elsewhere in the NBA. So it is, you know, like you said, it is as much an audition for other places as it is for the Celtics for these guys tonight. And I think, you know, Walt Lemon Jr., he did as good as pretty much anyone out there. When he was out there, you know, I almost felt more calm than when the starters were out there. You know, I think he was kind of a presence that made the game seem like it was swinging back in our direction a bit with his energy and with his actual shot making, even though he only had 3 of 8. So it was a good night for Walt Lemon. I'll leave it at that.
No, it's not far-fetched to say that he added a presence and he played well tonight. Look, you might say, wow, these two, Jack and Andrew, they're just kind of going off the road. What are they saying? Look, if you watch college basketball, a guy like Bonzi Colson, one healthy for Notre Dame, in the last 3 or 4 years when he played at Notre Dame, was a mainstay, was a great player, and was a guy that all analysts raved about. Guess what? He was on the floor tonight for the Cavaliers. He did not stand out at all, and guys on the Celtics, like a Walt Lemon Jr., absolutely did. So there's reason to say, wow, Walt Lemon Jr. and other guys like a Robert Williams looked very good and looked the part compared to guys who have played NCAA basketball and played for major ACC, SEC schools. And guess what? The guys that the Celtics have there, their 10 through 15 guys in the rotation, they look pretty good compared to even guys on the Cavs.
Yeah, and Danny Ainge has done well with finding these guys kind of like Walt Lemon Jr., kind of like Daniel Theis last year, Brad Wanamaker to a lesser extent this year, where they're kind of, you know, 27, 29, 26, you know, years old, first year in the league, that can come in and really give good minutes. You know, like, because guys like that a lot, they're guys that went undrafted. They've been playing in Europe in the cases of Daniel Theis and Wanamaker. And, you know, to really make it back into the league is a difficult thing. So, you know, for a guy like Lemon to stand out like that is a great thing for him. And it's a great thing for the team, too, because it gives them that problem, like I was mentioning before, you know, to decide whether or not they want to bring him back.
Yeah, look, and they have some decisions to make, and I think that, if anything, Danny Ainge's track record over the past 10 years or so has shown that any decision he makes, Celtics fans, you need to give Danny Ainge the benefit of the doubt. But look, I do want to talk about the other team that the Celtics played tonight. Obviously, I don't know if you've heard of that guy, LeBron James, but he left them for the Lakers this offseason, and the Cavs looked pretty decent in these two games against the Celtics without him. And I want to specifically talk about Colin Sexton, because Colin Sexton looked great on Tuesday night and especially tonight against the Celtics. He was making jump shots, he was under control, and he was a guy that looks like he can kind of slide in seamlessly for George Hill over the next couple of years on that Cavs roster.
Yeah, he really screams to me like a guy that doesn't get phased in big situations. He's a guy that, and I watched about 10 minutes total of college basketball last year, so I could be totally wrong about this, but he really does seem to me like that guy that comes in is just not phased by the big moments. He'll go at anyone. He's not scared. You know, he took it to Jaylen Brown a couple times. It didn't work out that well for him, but, you know, it didn't stop him from taking it to him again. He was hitting step backs. He was hitting pull-up threes. He was hitting catch-and-shoot threes. So I think he really, like, having not watched him at all in college and having seen some people on draft night say, oh, maybe he went too high, maybe he went too low, blah, blah, blah. You know, and this was my first game watching him. I didn't watch Tuesday's game. Unfortunately, I had to miss it. But, you know, he made a great first impression on me as someone who had never seen him play basketball before. So I think, you know, for a team that we'll say is kind of in transition right now as the Cavs are, I think he's a great starting point and someone that you can definitely put a team around with that kind of mindset that he has, where he doesn't get scared, where he doesn't get shook by the big moments.
Right, and that's my kind of major takeaway too, because kind of opposite of you. I watched Sexton a lot last year at the University of Alabama. He had a huge clutch shot in the SEC tournament in postseason play in March. He did lead Alabama to the NCAA tournament. They got in kind of in the last second, kind of as a fringe 10-11 seed. And look, Colin Sexton is exactly what, Jack, you're describing, whether you watch him a lot like I have or you watch him just kind of a little bit less like you have. Look, he's very consistent. He plays almost like a poor man's Chris Paul. He's not as shifty and he doesn't have as good of a handle, but he's a good jump shooter. You can tell he can run an offense pretty well. And like you said, this Cavs team, they need as many solid pieces as they can get, whether they want to try to make a trade, and because there's been a few mini Jimmy Butler rumors out there for the Cavs, or if you just want a guy like Colin Sexton to create a new culture with. He's the type of guy, like you said, he's not afraid of the moment. He looked pretty good tonight.
Yeah, and especially, like, you know, people gripe about Chetty Osmond that he's not, you know, one of the best wing prospects, you know, but he's still a serviceable piece. And, like, LeBron James leaving isn't exactly something you could plan for. The first time, obviously not. This time, maybe a little more, but still, like, they probably went into the offseason assuming they'd still have him at the, you know, at this point. So, for a team where they didn't have much time to kind of get assets or get things, get picks, accumulate players that they can kind of use, you know, in this post-LeBron era, where, you know, presumably he's not going back. So, you know, Colin Sexton, I think, is a good piece to have to kind of get them started in this era, similar to how Kyrie Irving was, you know, at the beginning of their last era. But, excuse me. So, but yeah, like having those pieces, having the Osmond, having, you know, maybe even Zizic, maybe even, you know, I can't really think of any other one else. But, you know, they're good enough pieces to have as far as right now.
No, and you and the Cavs, this is the thing too, is you're saying the first time LeBron left, maybe a little bit of a blind side by him. This time around, guess what the Cavs said? If all else fails, we have this Nets pick that the Celtics originally had that they got in the Isaiah Thomas deal and Kyrie Irving deal, and they kept it. And guess what? Yielding Colin Sexton is pretty good in a trade, considering that you didn't really know where the pick was going to land, because they could have went and swung for a guy like Michael Porter, but Michael Porter is not going to be playing this year for the Denver Nuggets. And so you're going almost in the safer route with a guy like Colin Sexton, and you can develop him. And I was impressed with the way the Cavs have played these past couple games against the Celtics. Look, maybe the Cavs are just – look, 2 years ago, the Cleveland Browns went 4-0 in the preseason, and then they went 0-16 in the regular season. So with the NBA, it could be like that, where the Cavs have a really good preseason so far. They have a couple games coming up and could absolutely be awful this coming regular season. But I think with the mainstays they have of Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson, I think the Cavs, for what it's worth, could end up being a low 7 or 8 seed in this Eastern Conference playoffs. Do you think that's far-fetched, Jack?
Absolutely not. No, I think they're – I don't want to say definitely going to be a playoff team, but I really, really do like their chances of being a playoff team in the East. Like Kevin Love, like you said, he is an all-star. Tristan Thompson, he's been on the team for a while. He's a proven player that has played in big games. You know, he's played in, what, 4 finals now. You know, so having those kind of guys, having the Sextons who seem to be, you know, acclimating to the league pretty well, having the guys like Osmond who seems to be a pretty good wing prospect, having, you know, even having like someone like Channing Frye, you know, who's been in the league for a while. So I don't think it's far-fetched at all to say that they're going to make the playoffs in the East, especially with how the East is. You know, that kind of bottom 2 spots, maybe even bottom 3 spots, kind of gets a little murky down there once you get past, you know, us, the Celtics, Raptors, Sixers, you know, Bucks, maybe Wizards, and then it kind of gets to the, like, Heat, maybe, you know, Pistons, maybe.
The
so
Magic,
I think,
the Pistons, right. Yeah, there's a lot of kind of average teams.
Yeah, so kind of slotting the Cavs in there, I don't think is far-fetched at all. With a team that's going to play hard, with a team that still has, you know, a bunch of players that have played in, you know, some of the biggest games ever, I think it's a good bet to have them in the playoffs.
Right, and look, this is my biggest thing too, is that all Ty Lue heard since he took over for the Cavs in the middle of their 2016 championship season is LeBron's the coach, Ty Lue does nothing, blah blah blah, Ty Lue means nothing, blah blah blah. Guess what? Ty Lue, if he can get to the Cavs to the playoffs this year, you don't think Ty Lue's motivated? He wants to say to everybody in the league, look, LeBron's a great player, but I'm a great coach, and I can make this thing keep going, and it's not going to be a 20-win team like the last time LeBron left. So Ty Lue has a lot to prove, and hey, guess what? If Ty Lue is able to get this team as high as a 6th seed, you have to say that he's going to be in consideration for Coach of the Year.
Yeah, and I think it was either Mike or Scal who commented on it early in the game. You saw their offense, how it was movement, 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 how they had, you know, multiple looks going on at the same time, multiple actions going on at the same time, as opposed to a LeBron James offense. You know, not saying that a LeBron James offense wouldn't be better, but, you know, they have all those options, all those looks in the offense at the time at the time of today. And that's, you know, that's not going to be something that's going to be bad for them. That's going to be something that's going to get guys like Sexton looks. That's going to be something that's going to get guys like Osman a lot of looks throughout the season. And it's going to be something that gives Kevin Love a lot of room to operate. So it's going to be a good offense, I think, you know, throughout the year, especially with, like I said before, how the Eastern Conference is. They're going to be able to kind of feast on some of those really, really bad teams, the Knicks, Nets, you know, Magic, you know, three, four times a year. So things aren't necessarily as bad as they could be in Cleveland, like you said. I don't think they're going to be a 20-win team either.
No doubt. And look, this is the other thing, too. People forget that Kevin Love was a 20-10 machine with the Timberwolves pre-LeBron and getting pre-Cavs, LeBron, and Kyrie era,
yeah,
and him playing with LeBron for the past 4 years. So, look, Kevin Love is out to prove some people wrong, too. He just signed a huge extension. He doesn't want to just coast. Kevin Love, in my opinion, is a consummate pro. He goes out there and he has a lot of things to prove as well. I think when he came out and had the whole mental health reveal, and good for him for doing that. And I think that
He
wants to show too that he can be consistent and kind of play well and also have an open dialogue about some of this mental health stuff in the league. So Cavs, as weird as it is to say, they are an interesting storyline this year, despite not having the most popular and, in many people's opinion, best player in the world in LeBron James. So Jack, we only have a couple minutes left, but I do want to talk about one quick thing. At the, what was it, end of the first quarter? It was the end of the first quarter. Little scuffle between J.R. Smith and Aaron Baines, then left to an altercation between J.R. Smith and Marcus Smart. And Marcus Smart was ready to fight, and he had to get taken down by Jason Tatum. So, Jack, I want to know, in the honor of the UFC fight tonight, I want to know, if you threw Marcus Smart and J.R. Smith in a ring in UFC, who would you throw money on?
I'm taking Marcus Smart all day. Call me. And that's not biased. I'm just taking Marcus Smart all day. I don't think I need to explain myself further.
I have to go with you too. And you, I have to go with Smart as well, especially because did you see how quick he had his hands ready? This was not I'm going to get to your face and talk smack. I mean, this was preseason basketball, Jack, and he had his hands ready like Conor McGregor's going to tonight. So I was pretty impressed by Marcus Smart. I want him on my team in a fight.
Him and Terry Rozier are, I think it was in the, yeah, it was in the, it was in one of the Cavs games last year. It got a little chippy as well. And Terry Rozier, it looked like he was moving 40 miles an hour to get into frame to get chippy with everyone else. So him and Terry are kind of like those two guys that you really just want on your side no matter what, no matter what's going on the court. So, like I said, I take Marcus Smart 100 times out of 100. I take him more than 100 times out of 100 if I could.
No, I'm with you on that. And look, Steven Adams of the Oklahoma City Thunder, he's a center, huge, big guy. He's I think he's either from New Zealand or Australia, a huge guy. And he was voted by the NBA GMs in a survey the toughest guy in the NBA. Well, folks, I think after tonight you can make an argument that Marcus Smart is just adding to his case. So, Jack, I really was glad that we could do this. The Celtics' last preseason game was tonight, but we do have a Celtics CLNS postgame show for game one of the 2018-2019 regular season on October 16th. It's a Tuesday. It is against the Philadelphia 76ers, Jack's most hated rival. NBA Twitter is going to be going nuts. Ben Simmons will be going nuts and not shooting three-pointers, I'm sure. I'm going to have
Ben
that
Simmons,
game
I'll see you at the game.
Along with Taylor McLeod. Jack's going to be at the game rooting hard for the Celtics. So, folks, please tune in then. As for now, for my host, Jack Michael, I am Andrew Vino. So long, and have a good night, and go Red Sox.